A presidential speechwriter once watched five U.S. presidents command rooms with nothing but their words. He noticed something curious. The most powerful leaders rarely spoke the most. They paused. They gestured. They knew that silence could be more commanding than sound. James C. Humes spent decades decoding the communication secrets of history's greatest orators, from Churchill's wartime defiance to Lincoln's battlefield eulogy, and discovered that commanding attention isn't about charisma you're born with. It's a craft you can learn. In an era where the average person scrolls past content in seconds, these techniques for capturing and holding attention feel almost subversive. Warren Buffett keeps this wisdom close, believing it can increase your value by half. The question isn't whether you can afford to master these skills, it's whether you can afford not to. Mexican President Benito Juarez revealed his secret to commanding presence. I simply pause before I speak. Napoleon instructed his secretaries to wait 3 weeks before responding to letters. The delay wasn't procrastination, it was power. That discomfort during silence, that's exactly why the pause works. It violates our expectation of constant noise. Queen Elizabeth II paused deliberately before important statements, creating gravitational pull. Try this. Insert a 3-second pause before your key point. People straighten in their chairs, wandering eyes suddenly lock onto you. Picture a speaker beginning with, "Thank you for that kind introduction." Your mind is already wandering. Compare that to FDR announcing the unprovoked and dastardly attack on Pearl Harbor. Churchill rejected a speech draft with pleasantries, declaring, "This is the sort of bloody nonsense up with which I will not put." Consider the CEO who began a critical meeting by smashing a plate on the table. Like this plate, our market share has been shattered. Your audience decides within seconds whether you're worth listening to. Make those seconds count with your most compelling idea, striking image, or provocative question. George Washington wore his military uniform to the Constitutional Convention as a visual reminder of leadership. Benjamin Franklin dressed as a simple frontier philosopher in Europe, embodying American simplicity. Lincoln's stovepipe hat added 7 inches. Roosevelt meticulously arranged appearances to project strength despite his wheelchair. Margaret Thatcher's tailored suits and signature handbag became so authoritative that to handbag entered British slang, meaning to verbally defeat an opponent. Churchill never used slides, neither did Roosevelt or Reagan. They understood the most powerful visual is the speaker, their presence, gestures, and the pictures they paint with words. Today's executives often hide behind PowerPoint, using slides as a crutch born from fear of facing audiences directly. Develop your presentation as if no visuals existed. Perfect your story. Refine arguments. Practice until you could present in darkness. Only then consider what might enhance your message. Your visual presence speaks first. Choose attire reinforcing your message. Stand tall. Move purposefully. Maintain eye contact. The most effective visual is often your body. Gestures, expressions, and movement create dynamism no slide can match. What's the one thing you want your audience to remember? If you can't answer in 15 words or less, you're not ready to speak. President Eisenhower refused to let speechwriters begin drafting until they identified the key takeaway. During Britain's darkest days, Churchill's message was crystal clear. We need to build more planes to counter Nazi strength. Think of your message as the dominant melody in a symphony. Beethoven wove his 5th symphony around 4 simple notes. Martin Luther King Jr. distilled complex civil rights issues into "I Have a Dream," a concrete vision audiences could understand, remember, and rally behind. Brevity requires effort but delivers impact. Lincoln's Gettysburg Address lasted just over 2 minutes. Its 272 words have echoed through generations, while the 2-hour oration preceding it has been forgotten. Churchill's blood, toil, tears, and sweat speech ran just 500 words. Why does brevity work? It forces clarity and respects your audience's time. Shorter messages are more likely to be remembered and repeated. Steve Jobs ruthlessly edited presentations for maximum impact. Jeff Bezos banned PowerPoint at Amazon, replacing it with six-page memos that begin with the conclusion. The power brief isn't about saying less, it's about achieving more with fewer words. Challenge yourself. If you typically take 30 minutes, deliver the same content in 20. Every word should earn its place. Ronald Reagan would reach for his reading glasses before delivering a quote, creating a visual cue that something important was coming. During a debate with Walter Mondale, he quoted John F. Kennedy, using his opponent's party hero against him. Quoting someone your audience respects but wouldn't expect you to cite suggests your argument transcends partisan boundaries. The most powerful quotes are concise, memorable, and employ rhetorical devices like contrast, ask not what your country can do for you, metaphor, iron curtain, or parallelism. Use them sparingly at strategic moments to open, emphasize a key point, or close. Used excessively, they make you seem unoriginal. The U.S. government's regulation on cabbage spans 26,911 words, while the Lord's Prayer contains just 66 words. Statistics like these create instant perspective. Make them comparative. We processed 10,000 transactions last quarter, 3 times our previous record. Beats, we processed 10,000 transactions last quarter. Specificity adds authenticity. Precise figures like 26,900 seem more researched than rounded ones. Give numbers human scale. Instead of, we serve 500,000 customers annually, try, we serve 500,000 people each year. That's like filling Yankee Stadium 10 times over. Churchill's blood, toil, tears, and sweat, and King's I Have a Dream endure through the CREAM formula. Contrast, rhyme, echo, alliteration, and metaphor. Contrast creates tension. Kennedy's ask not what your country can do for you. Rhyme exploits pattern recognition. Franklin's early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Echo amplifies through repetition. King's I Have a Dream sequence. Alliteration adds musicality. Kennedy's pay any price, bear any burden. Metaphor transforms abstractions. Churchill's Iron Curtain conveyed division more powerfully than analysis. Direct questions engage. Reagan's, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? To craft power lines, identify your core message, apply cream, and test aloud. The goal isn't wordplay. It's making your idea so memorable that audiences carry it long after you finished speaking. Your conclusion is your final chance to move your audience, to ensure they leave inspired, not just informed. Churchill concluded his Finest Hour speech with the stirring declaration that if the British Empire lasted 1,000 years, people would still say this was their finest hour. Reagan mastered the emotional closer, ending his Challenger tribute with astronauts slipping the surly bonds of Earth to touch the face of God, words that provided national catharsis. A powerful conclusion employs power audacity, the courage to break convention for impact. When Reagan declared, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall," his State Department advisors had repeatedly tried to remove it. His insistence created one of his presidency's most memorable moments. Your conclusion should feel like a musical crescendo where all themes converge. King's speech begins with the Emancipation Proclamation as a promissory note and concludes with freedom ringing from every mountainside, a return to the promise theme, now fulfilled. To craft your power closer, ask, "What emotion do I want my audience to feel as they leave?" Then identify an image, story, or call that evokes that emotion while reinforcing your core message. Practice delivering this with appropriate vocal modulation, often slightly slower and more deliberate than your speech's body. Your conclusion is what audiences remember most clearly. A weak ending undermines the strongest presentation, while a powerful closer transforms an ordinary speech into something unforgettable.